Whatever you might have. Also, we would remind you that we would prefer that acronyms not be used. And if you're going to use them, please at least identify what they refer to a couple of times, because we have citizens that we're really trying to promote to tune in on the Internet and be a part of this meeting. And so we would like to have our citizens be more involved with this process. And yet when we start throwing out acronyms, it's like you get glazed over. I was in one meeting last week and made a list and had over 20 just in one meeting, because I'm trying to have this list of acronyms so that we can review them before every meeting, right? Anyway, that's just something that we'd appreciate you doing. Also, when you come to the desk, would you identify yourself? And if your name is at all difficult, would you spell it for us? And then we have a little white sign there just to remind you of these things. Right, so with that, we would like to begin. Sheila, is there anything that we need to review first?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just a little bit of housekeeping thing. There was a question last week on the performance measures binder and the numbers in there. And in looking at it further, it turns out that the one number that led to the question was just a typo or a printing page. Generally, the numbers that these refer to are the pages in this document. So that'll help you as you go through that. And then into today's topic, what we have is a status report on Senate Bill 555 from the 1999 session. I sent a memo around to your offices on Friday just to give you a little bit of background. In case you haven't seen that, basically what it said was Senate Bill 555 was a comprehensive piece of legislation. It set up a broad planning framework for children's services, alcohol and drug services, and juvenile services. And this has been an ongoing process. And the reason that we're here today is that the 2003 legislature asked this legislature to have a report to update them on where the agencies and the local entities are on this, because again, it's an ongoing process, and so they wanted to touch base with what was happening. So that's where we are today. And
okay, we have a quorum, so I'll close our subcommittee of the subcommittee, and we will now open the regular subcommittee meeting for today. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I make an introduction for someone who has come a fairly long way to be with us today? We have back in the cheap seats against the far row. This is not church. You can come forward anytime. Mr. Leonard Freeman. He's from OSU, and he's one of the really leading-edge healthcare thinkers that we have in the state of Oregon. So anyway, welcome. Thank you for being with us today, Leonard.
Well, I appreciate very much you being here, because we need forward thinkers. We're glad you're here. All right, we'd like to begin by inviting Mickey Lansing, Director of the State Chair or Commission on Children and Families, to come up.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Mickey Lansing. I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. Chair Richardson and members of the committee, I want to introduce to you, and I'm not sure.
Before Ms. Mickey began, my regrets, I have to leave for an 8:45 meeting with the President's office on budget. So,
yeah. Well, thank you for mentioning that. Also, at 10 o'clock, Senator Montanus also has to be excused. So as they leave, it's not because they didn't like what you just said. Okay, I understand. Thank you very much.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, I would like to invite up with me, that way maybe we can be here all at once, Karen Andall from the Oregon Youth Authority, Becky Eklund from the Criminal Justice Commission, and we will be joined by Nancy Latini from the Oregon Department of Education. But she is next door in the Education Committee. After she's introduced, she will come and join us.
Mm-hmm.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, this morning we are reporting on the work. We are updating you on Senate Bill 555, now known as Partners for Children and Families. That's how we see ourselves. The five core agencies that are coordinating around this work are the Oregon Youth Authority, the Criminal Justice Commission, the Department of Human Services, the Oregon Department of Education, and the Oregon Commission on Children and Families. We're going to give you just a brief history on why we were created. We're going to talk to you about why we are here. We're going to talk to you about what we are doing now, what are the outcomes and the results of that work, and then we're going to talk to you about where we are going from here. What does the future look like? But I think the most important thing is that we are going to have for you, and they will be passed out when I talk about this, but a compilation of at least 30 counties and the results they are seeing as they have done their coordination and working together around comprehensive planning. We understand that your committee is a Ways and Means committee. You are a budget developer and you provide oversight to the state budget process. What you need to know is that none of our agencies have received any funds for doing this work. We do it because it is something that you have asked us to do and you've directed us to do, and we now know after several years of experience what the results of this work can be. Our funding streams, each of us, are not all that large. The dollars are focused on prevention activities, but we work together to see what it is that we can do to make things much more accessible to communities, and by working together, can we maximize the use of our finite resources. The main thrust of this presentation is to report on the progress of the work of the state agencies in working together to better support our local communities. We cover the whole continuum, ages 0 through 18 years of age, and we are trying to coordinate and streamline our efforts. With that, I will introduce you to Karen Andahl of Oregon Youth Authority.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Karen Andahl. I'm with the Oregon Youth Authority in the director's office there. Thank you for having us this morning, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. The 1999 legislature passed Senate Bill 555 to consolidate planning requirements for juvenile crime prevention for high-risk youth, alcohol and drug abuse and substance abuse prevention, early childhood development, and school readiness into a consolidated comprehensive plan for children and families. Previous to that legislation, all of those planning efforts were separate and not cohesive in nature. The purpose of Senate Bill 555 was to address the problems experienced at the county level of conducting multiple planning processes and a lack of coordination among programs. The legislature also gave a specific role to citizens, service providers, and consumers to determine local priorities in their communities and approaches to providing services in those areas. The state agency's role is to streamline programs at the state level and work with communities to assist them in the goals as well, and to reduce overlaps and address gaps in services. Senate Bill 555 is a collaborative relationship between key agencies and communities. The legislation led to the joining of the key state agencies named in the bill as a state-level interagency coordinating group. And this group has worked to implement policies related to Senate Bill 555. The name Partners for Children and Families was actually adopted by those state agencies together and the community agencies in the partnership. And we've worked hard to improve and streamline those requirements who receive various funding pieces that flow to communities from Senate Bill 555 agencies. The Partners for Children and Families, or known as PCF, was quickly expanded to include representatives of local communities and systems, and today there are approximately 9 state agencies and 4 community representatives on the Partnership for Children and Families. In addition, additional state partners have become involved as well, aside from the key agencies, because they see value in the work. The partnership provides consistent forum that is necessary for the work to be accomplished to work with communities. The work of the PCF, or the Partners for Children and Families, has been reviewed by legislative fiscal audit, by an audit, and also by an audit of the National Crime Prevention Commission, which provided some limited funding to this effort for several years. Both audits did find that collaboration among state agencies has increased and that services have improved. We do believe we still have work to do in assisting in the streamlining effort. We're trying to create the least bureaucratic process for communities that we can. We still have work to do in this area. And hopefully the counties who will come to speak later can help you understand some of the challenges that we still have. I'm sure they'll, and they're at the table with us to help. I believe now we're moving to
Nancy.
Nancy isn't here.
Nancy, okay.
Yeah, that's very encouraging when there's the appropriate pause and you guys are looking. Anyone want to fill in?
Right on through. Next.
We can skip. Mr. Chairman, I would like to fill in a little bit. I just want to give kudos to the Oregon Youth Authority. You guys have really done a good job of working with youth and trying to make sure that they have a second chance, so a kudos to the director.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Let's just go on, Mickey, to your portion relating to where we're at now. What's our current status?
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, Partners in for Children and Families has worked very hard to get to the point of what we call implementation. Many people have thought that in 1999 we were given millions of dollars to plan, and we continue to plan, plan, and plan. I want to tell you that is not so. The bill passed in 1999. In 2000, every county was asked to map their barriers, their strengths, their resources, and their gaps in services. The next effort, and we called that phase one, was the mapping. Phase two was that they were asked to submit a local comprehensive community plan, again with all the entities that we have mentioned at the table and looking at what communities have as their priorities and what strategies they were going to use to try to address the priorities in their particular communities. They submitted their plans in April of 2002 and began to implement. We are now at the stage where they are starting to report to us on the progress of that implementation. All of you have a copy of results of comprehensive community planning that outlines at least 30 counties. Senator Bates and Representative Richardson, you will note that Jackson County is not there because they are here today in person to talk to you about results, and we will include them after this particular presentation. But historically, what we know is that we in state agencies have, to some degree, had a silo mentality. Each of us has had a mission and purpose, and we've worked in that particular way. But through our coordination and our planning, we have been able to work with one another, maximize the resources, and in this time of diminished resources, we've been able to, in many cases, hold the line on results for kids and their families. Many counties have relied on the relationships established in the comprehensive planning process to work collaboratively to make sure that the most essential services for their citizens continue to be had. Partners for Children and Families is working on a data collection system where we have Department of Human Services, the Criminal Justice Commission, and the Oregon Commission on Children and Families looking at a shared data process where we will have a data warehouse. Each one of those agencies will put the data in, will be able to get the data out, and will be able to aggregate that particular data. Funding for prevention services in the last 3 years has been significantly reduced. This funding comes on the heels of what we believe has been really good success in the area around the prevention of juvenile crime, substance abuse, the school dropout rate, and also the improving of our early childhood development as measured by our school readiness scores. And when Becky Eklund gets to her part about where we're going, she's going to have a graph to show you where we're at in that particular way.
Becky, can I interrupt just for a minute? Would you go into a little more detail about the Common Data Bank as far and again, tell me what that is, how it's being utilized, how consistent it'll be, and whether or not, you know, we can really come up with, you know, outcomes from the use of that.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, this is something, to tell you the truth, we've been working on for at least 2 years. Each of us has our own data system and the way in which we collect data. What we have done, our agency has created an architecture, and it's like a data warehouse where people can still use the same data systems that they're using, but they'll be able to put data in this particular data warehouse so that we'll be able to aggregate that data and we'll have common outcomes on a statewide basis. And it will make it easier for the counties to input their data. It can go to one place around these particular pieces.
Okay, is that a data bank for the Commission of Children and Families that you're developed, that you've developed, or who's developed that?
Chair Richardson, yes. It's okay. Been the Commission on Children and Families.
How many counties are participating in that by placing their data into that format so that there is this common resource?
Chair Richardson, we're not quite to that point. What we're the point that we're at now is that we've had three agencies that have agreed to look at this. We'd like to expand that. But each one of those agencies now are looking at, it's like we have built the house, we framed the house in, but we still have to design the rooms. And the rooms have to be designed by each one of the agencies so they can say what kind of data are they able to put in this particular data warehouse. What do they want? What do they need for their purposes as well as for our purposes on a holistic basis?
Well, when do you expect that these rooms will be completed so that we can have a holistic basis to actually have facts that we can use?
Chair Richardson, if we could get the okay to move ahead with these counties, it could be done within 6 to 9 months is when we believe that the architecture is there.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could clarify, Mickey, could you talk a little bit about the data system that the commission itself has for counties to report for the funding that it receives through the commission? Because I think I don't want there to be confusion that that system isn't up and running and working.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. We do have a data system at the commission already where counties input their data and we're able to monitor their outcomes, how many children are served. That is something that is ongoing. But what we want to do is actually revamp that and have the capacity to have other agencies enter their data in. And we just have the architecture, just the warehouse for that for other agencies. But already we are using our database to collect the data that we need. And each one of those other agencies is doing the same thing. We just want a common area where data can be sent, and then we can have a better perspective in terms of what the data says.
Okay, you know, I'm really new at this, and so what I'm really trying to just make sure I understand is there a place presently, or will there be within a reasonable amount of time, where the outcomes will be measured and not merely the inputs or the outputs? You know what I'm saying? I'd like to know how we're doing, what's the result of what we're doing, not merely how much activity is taking place.
Chair Richardson and members of the committee, yes, we agree, and that's what we're trying to do. Already, our database does measure outcomes in terms of the activities for the Commission on Children and Families. So we know what our targets are. We know what percentage of targets we're meeting. You'll hear about that in the next 2 days.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator.
Just to follow up, because I'm most familiar with Healthy Start, and I worked with them when it first started, back in the early 90s when we started all of this. I'm confused. I know that we entered data into a database. But I'm still a little bit confused as to, and it seemed, I thought all of the counties sent it all to one place, and I'm still not quite sure what you're asking for.
Chair Richardson, Senator Mona Sanderson, the Healthy Start database is different than everything else because we use FamilyNet through the health department. Mm-hmm. So that's the database for that particular piece, because Healthy Start is a program that has a yearly evaluation. And so we use that data, especially to, well, to track a variety of things. But many of those things have to do with child abuse rates and other issues, immunizations, different kinds of things.
So this, what you're requesting, is for the other areas that don't have access to that. Yeah, I understand.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Okay. Please continue.
Partners for Children and Families, because of the coordination, has optimized our funding opportunities. We, together with Department of Human Services, with the Oregon Department of Education, with the Child Care Division, have written joint grants to get additional dollars. We have worked together in terms of Senate Bill 267 and evidence-based practices. Not only do we have the five core agencies for Partners for Children and Families, but we also work with the Department of Corrections on ensuring that dollars, funds that are sent to our agencies are, everything that is funded is based upon evidence-based practice. And I don't know how much all of you know about that, but in this next biennium, at least 25% of those funds have to be based upon that. The following biennium, 50%, and the following, when we get to 09-011, 75% of funding streams in those agencies have to be based upon evidence-based practices. We've integrated our planning processes, as we've talked about before. We have provided data to counties, so each county can look at a data set, know what their baselines, and it helps them in terms of measuring their particular outcomes. However, we still have a ways to go in ensuring that our data is consistent across all of our agencies. We are, at this point in time, reviewing and responding to what the counties have said to us are barriers in order for them to do their work. You're going to, again, hear a little more about that. But one of the things we asked them in our last comprehensive plan update, which was due in June of 2004, was tell us, from your perspective, what are the barriers that we need to address at the state level to ensure that their work is better supported. And the communication among the agencies has been excellent. There are collaborations that we're doing. When last session, the Commission on Children and Families had a position that was devoted to providing technical assistance to counties around cultural competency. That position was eliminated because the commission took a 30% reduction in staffing at that particular time. Because that position and that work was so important to the counties, five agencies in our partnership gathered together. Everybody offered up a certain amount of money. We've been able to continue that position as a limited duration position, but funded with five agencies. We have been in the process of doing what we call linking communities with schools, knowing that education is so vital and so important that the community has to support that aspect. We have done an initiative called the Community Schools Initiative in partnership with the Oregon Department of Education, the Department of Human Services, and the Criminal Justice Commission. Also, community colleges and workforce development has been part of that collaboration. We are just about ready to launch the initiative, and the Oregon Department of Education is going to place a half-time FTE in the Commission for Children and Families because of the work in community. That's just a snapshot of some of the things we've done as state agencies. I want to call to your attention some of the things that have been done at the local level. The first county I want to talk about is Josephine County, and it is on page 10 of this particular handout. And here are their results. Each year, the commission uses information from a variety of sources to track outcome data on 11 issues that are key strategies in their local community plan. One of the 11 issues, or of the 11 issues, 7 showed improvement from 2000 to 2003. 2 issues have only 1 year of data, and 1 issue had no change. Thus, 77% of issues that were identified as priority issues based on the past year's data and community perceptions have shown improvements in our community. Another county, Hood River County, on the same page states that the comprehensive planning process has helped coordination between agencies, with the commission pulling together partners when needed or partnering with existing and well-functioning collaborations. The plan is the center of many of the leveraging efforts. The commission has been instrumental in leveraging $3,628,795 since 2002. In matching funds for such things as drug-free community grants, school counseling, tobacco prevention, Hispanic outreach, and mentoring. Basically, we have helped our county zero in on what we need. We measure, evaluate, and develop the skills and successes to access additional funds. I also want to call your attention to Tillamook County on page 8. The comprehensive planning process creates focus on common objectives and strategies, making everyone more accountable for results. A myriad of partners take on a project rather than one organization trying to develop and sustain the work. The commission serves as a catalyst to make sure that the energy is sustained over time and that partners evaluate their progress and continue to communicate. Through partnerships and joint grant writing efforts, we've obtained more than $300,000 a year to continue programs and services that otherwise would have been cut. Funds have been used to leverage an additional $30,000 locally. Now, Tillamook is one of our smallest counties, and they continue to get excellent results based upon the work they're doing with one another. And then the last one I want to point out is Crook County. The Crook County Early Childhood Systems Comprehensive Planning has created a cohesive group out of disparate programs. Members agree that the process has created a more effective use of the resource. The Status of Children 2004 report shows reduced rates of child abuse neglect, dropping from 9.4 per thousand to 5.9 per thousand in 2003. We attribute the work of the Early Childhood Committee and partnerships through early intervention and support to parents to the progress on this common goal. Those are just 4 examples of the results of people working together to try to ensure that the whole becomes greater than the sum of the parts. We sent out a survey to counties asking them, tell us specifically, what are the results? What are the positive outcomes for kids and their families based upon the work you've done in your community? And I think this particular piece will give you, for almost every county, the results that are taking place and the work that is being done. I also want to talk about the juvenile crime prevention outcomes for kids. Risk factors were reduced between 19% and 83%, with the highest reductions in school, academic failure, chronic truancy, dropout, suspensions, expulsions, runaways, causing injuries to others, and disruption at school. Youth receiving JCP, juvenile crime prevention services, are at high risk of imminent involvement in the juvenile justice system. Yet 96% of them were not referred for criminal behavior in the year following service. Juvenile offenders in juvenile crime prevention programs committed fewer and less serious crimes after receiving juvenile crime prevention services than before they had those supports. And juvenile crime prevention youth post-service recidivism was substantially below the recidivism rate of juvenile offenders. This is a piece from the Juvenile Crime Prevention Evaluation conducted by the University of Oregon. When was that last evaluation, Becky?
Last biennium.
Last biennium. So, just to recap, we are getting real results on the ground as a result of agencies working together. And our role at the state level is to support local communities in building their capacity to respond to the needs of their children and their families. We are very privileged today to have two counties with us to talk about what actually they are doing on the ground. The first county is Jackson County, the Commission on Children and Families, Karen Niebuhr and Sarah Heath. The second county is Lane County with C.A. Baskerville, who is the prevention coordinator for Lane County. At this time, I would like them to come forward.
Okay, when would we like to, or when would we be able to hear from Becky Eklund?
She is Chair Richardson and members of the committee. Becky Eklund is going to finish our presentation today and talk about the future. Where do we go from here?
Okay, thank you.
We have some handouts. Do we give those to... Mm-hmm.
Welcome to our subcommittee.
Good morning. We're a little nervous.
All right. We're all in this together.
My name is Karen Niebuhr, and I'm the director for the Commission on Children and Families in Jackson County. We've been asked to talk with you today about the implementation of the comprehensive planning process and Senate Bill 555 in our community. And I'd like to start by talking about the impact on the continuum of services for children and families. The 555 partnership, both at the state and local level, is really the only place that has the mandate, other than the legislature themselves, to address the entire continuum of services for children 0 to 18 and their families. We certainly have many state programs that deal with children and families, but they each have a specific focus, either on a specific issue or a specific age group or both. This process is really the one place in the state and at the community level where we try to look at the whole picture. One of our decisions in our county at the outset was that planning in and of itself has limited value, and that the value comes in the action that happens and the impact of that action on our community. One of the results of our work has been to increase resources in our community. This year alone, the 555 process has directly accessed over $1 million in additional state, federal, and foundation grants. When I say directly, I mean that the staff involved have written the grant and also have a role either in administration, evaluation, or coordination. In addition to that piece, the partners that are involved in work groups in our community on the 555 have access more than that in agency grants to develop programs around the specific objectives that our work groups have identified in our strategies. In terms of an example of where, if we had not done this process, we would not have accessed a grant, about a year and a half ago, we had the opportunity to apply for funds for families who needed mental health or substance abuse treatment and had children 0 to 8. We had two-week turnaround time between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Our early childhood partnership team had already done the planning. They had identified children's mental health as a second priority in our community. They knew what the needs were. They knew the specific programs that we did not have, and they knew the populations that needed those programs. In 2 days, we were able to pull together the members from that early childhood partnership team, mental health professionals, substance abuse professionals, and put together a grant that accessed to our community those services. Without that planning, we would have never been able to do that kind of complex grant in that short turnaround time. Another result of our work has been better planning around budget reductions, which is one of the realities that we are looking at over and over again. Our best example of this is in the middle of the last biennium, our juvenile justice advisory team was stuck in the middle of the biennium at looking at cuts that for every dollar of juvenile crime prevention funding that we had already out in contracts for services, we were looking at cuts that brought that amount down to 38 cents. So it was basically about one, we had left about one out of $3. The Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee called together all of the providers who we had contracts with. We pulled together the whole Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee, including the judges, including the juvenile department, including community justice, the schools, mental health people, and we had this very miserable three-hour meeting where we looked at the reality, we looked at what is the wisest use of the money that we had left, and really talk through program by program, and at the end of that meeting, that group was able to come to agreement on what we could preserve. And it wasn't just a straight across-the-board cut, which would have been the easy choice. It was really looking at program by program, what do we most need, what infrastructure do we most need to preserve. The county commissioner that sat on that group was astounded that everybody could walk out of that group in agreement, including the providers who lost a great deal of program money that for programs they loved and believed in. I think the another result that I wanted to talk about is the because our mandate is so large, it allows our staff that are involved in this process a lot of flexibility so that we can really deal with the priority issues in our community and work with the community around those. And the two best examples of that, Jackson County about 8 years ago was doing intensive, exciting work on service integration. We had all of the state partners, the county partners, and the nonprofit agencies who were coming together with really exciting geographic programs that worked to benefit children and families. The directors of those agencies and organizations were meeting every other week to do the planning around this. They needed somebody to facilitate those meetings. They needed somebody to develop the agenda, to do the membership list, to keep the process going. We also had 8 small grants at that time that helped the process. They needed somebody that would figure out the outcomes for those grants and integrate them so that they all made sense with each other. So we were able to step in and for the 2 years that hole was there, do that work for our community. At the end of 2 years, the work was so good that the Department of Human Services gave to our county a top-level administrator that could carry that work forward. The present example of where we are able to do that is Jackson County is devastated right now with methamphetamine. It's filling our jail beds. It's filling our foster homes. 80% of both of those populations right now are there because of methamphetamine. We had a small group of people that were looking at the overall impact of meth in terms of law enforcement, in terms of public safety, in terms of prevention, in terms of treatment, and realizing that we have got to do a better job and pull together. We developed a meth task force. They needed somebody to facilitate that group, to pull it together, to develop the agenda, to work with the group to figure out where we wanted to go next. We were able to step into that role. 2 weeks ago, we had a very intense meth summit meeting where 100 citizens in Jackson County were invited to come together. They included the top policymakers, top business people, treatment providers, prevention people, school people, people in recovery from meth. Those 100 people spent 3 hours figuring out key strategies in our community, community strategies about how we can deal with meth. The infrastructure for pulling that summit together, we were able to step in and do that. So again, we are able to fill those gaps in our community as they come up. I'd next like to have Sarah continue to talk a little bit about value added and impact.
Thank you, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. It's good to be here, I think. This is my second time before you. Last year I came up with one of our members of the commission. So it's exciting to see where our government is being done.
Sarah, say your full name just so that we'll have that.
Sarah Heath, and the Project Services Coordinator, staff person with the commission. So just what is the value added to Jackson County as a result of all of this planning? Three things that I would just like to bring up. One is a higher level of community involvement at the grassroots level. Another one is better service integration for the at-risk families. And a third one would be sharing our resources and expertise in the community. At the higher level of community involvement, I'll give you an example of a drug-free community grant that we got where we're providing services to reduce substance abuse out in White City, which is a high-intensity drug trafficking area of about 7,400 people in that community. And we are now starting our third year of a five-year renewable federal grant, and we have 60 coalition members who are active. I mean, a lot of times you can start a grassroots effort and you get people to turn out, and CA will probably talk about this. How do you sustain that community involvement? How do you, when you leave and that grant is over, are they still going to continue to be involved? So I'm the coalition coordinator for that grant, and that's always in my mind. We have been able to reach out to the business, the faith community, the school, the sheriff's department. One of our integration sites is in that community. And every year, we have to come up with over $92,000 in matching funds. That helps to invest the community in that grant. So that's an exciting way to involve community in finding their own solutions. The second one would be our county has selected mentoring, as have many, many of the other counties, as a strategy to help reduce teen alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use. And mentoring is it's not just, you want to have safe, quality mentoring. So we thought one of the things that was important is to provide training. We did two Southern Oregon regional training conferences, bringing national experts. We partnered with Oregon Mentors, who you probably are familiar with, and we partnered with Asante Health Systems in Jackson and Josephine County to help sponsor involving the community in that. So, again, mentoring is another way to bring in community people and spending time with kids who really could use a caring adult in their life. Better service integration for at-risk families. The family resource centers, they're neighborhood-based. It makes it easy and less confusing for people to go to a place in their community to access a variety of services. The DSNT in our county acronym, Direct Service Network Teams, we have those in six of our school districts, and this is school folks, community folks, sheriff's department. They come together, and they have a very small amount of money to help kids, and they do a lot of planning with kids who are at risk. It's been effective in helping reduce our high school dropout rate. Community Family Drug Court is probably one of the most exciting things in our county right now. And this is where one judge will see all of the cases relating to that family. So they really know what's going on in that family, and there's high accountability. And I think probably less confusing for the families. I was a mentor for a lunch buddy, and her father was in prison. Her mother went through the Community Family Drug Court. So I got to hear it from the perspective of my lunch buddy. And she talked a lot about it. She was so proud of her mom. And her mom did graduate successfully. And Lizzie was included in that. And she talked about some of the family therapy that she would be going to, the celebration parties that they would have for these families when they graduated. So that was seeing it from the perspective of a mentor. And finally, shared resources and expertise. When I was here last year, I think it might have been Senator Carter who asked me, do the different commissions, do they ever collaborate on grant writing? And we, in fact, had just collaborated on a grant. This was Jackson, Josephine, Marion, Lane, Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas. We collaborated together for a child care quality improvement project. And we are now, in June, we'll be finishing up that project. But one of the exciting things that came out of that is each county identifying their area of expertise in training their child care providers and making a plan to go on the road and share that kind of training. That's a good use of expertise among the commissions. So, Chair Richardson, you asked about outcomes. And there are two ways that we measure our outcomes directly using Clara Pratt's with Oregon State University research-based outcomes for all of the programs that we fund. And then we also have the state benchmark outcomes. And I'm happy to report, I mean, that's how do individual programs can make a difference, but are you making a difference countywide? And I was updating our comprehensive plan, which is good because it forces you to take a good overall look at, well, how are you doing? And we're doing better than I thought we were. We have reduced our teen pregnancy rates, our high school dropout rates, including the Hispanic dropout rates. We've reduced teen tobacco and marijuana use. And in fact, we exceed all of the benchmarks for 2005 in those areas. The big concern is an increase in child abuse and neglect. And that's one of the top priorities in our county. And the fact that we have been going up and that we are consistently higher than the state is a real concern. We have a lot of work yet to do. And in looking at that, there is a direct relationship with the methamphetamine epidemic. It doesn't always mean that you're doing the wrong programs. It can mean that there are things going on in the community. And when you look at poverty, unemployment, and the methamphetamine, it could be a whole lot worse had we not had the prevention programs in place that we do. And as Karen mentioned, our child welfare director, 11 out of 11 families that had to have their children removed and put into foster homes last month were all because of methamphetamine. And so what are we doing about that? One of the programs that we have is Healthy Start, which you're familiar with, Senator Anderson. And with the Healthy Start, they have this, for those of you who don't know, that is a universal screening program for every volunteer, first family, and then intensive home visiting services for the eligible families. In other words, the ones who screen out to have some risk factors. We have one of our healthy, and this is done through Public Health and also La Clinica. They carry a caseload of Hispanic families. One of the Healthy Start advocates has a caseload that's entirely substance abusing parents, so that you can get at those families early before they get into real trouble. I think it's one of those windows of opportunity. Very often when a mother is pregnant, she will be able to maybe stop using drugs long enough, but then when the stresses of parenting come back, you can use the extra help to keep you going the wrong direction. The outcome is that last year, of 779 families who received those intensive case management services, 99%, or 771 families, they did not have founded incidences of child abuse in that first year. So that's having an impact. That home visiting is a best practice program.
May I interrupt just for a moment?
Sure you can.
Since it's a voluntary program, it would seem that those that need it least out of that population would be the ones that would be getting the service, because they're the ones that say, hey, sure, come into my home, I want to have it. Mm-hmm. Where those that may be most distrustful of the government would be those that would be least likely to volunteer to have the government, you know, help in whatever program it's listed, you know, come into their homes and participate with them. How do you deal with that?
If I could address that, we work in strong partnership with Public Health's General Services and with Child Welfare. And so a lot of the families we get are direct referrals from WIC, from the families that public health nurses go out to. And Child Welfare will often divert families. If they see a family that is just on the edge of becoming a founded case, they will, if they can get into Healthy Start, then they will see that service as being the service that will keep that family from needing to be on child welfare. So we get a lot of very high-risk families because of our close work with the agencies that work with them.
Okay.
And the other thing I would add to that are highly skilled family advocates, especially the one who is working specifically with substance abuse cases. They know how to gain the trust. And I think that a mother who has got a problem with methamphetamine or other drugs, who's just had her baby, really does, down deep, want to be a good mother. And if they have somebody who can speak to them in the right way and gain their trust, they will volunteer. And I think a high percentage of those, but you're right, there's some that aren't going to be reached.
Okay, if we can interrupt just for a moment, Senator Winters.
Mr. Chair, first a comment, and my comment is about White City and the integrated services, and I did take a visit down. I finally got a chance to come down and visit White City, and I was very impressed, because it's the whole issue of bringing services together in order to solve and resolve and dealing with the family as a whole rather than in segments and pieces. So I just need to say that for the record, because it's something that I have been trying to get not only in White City but in other parts of the state, as Senator Bates knows. We've talked about this a lot.
Five years.
because truly to be able to bring everything into one place and to work on multiple issues is laudable. I asked Senator Bates just on a side whether or not you had in Jackson County as a part of your service delivery mode relief nurseries, and he said you hadn't quite gotten there yet. So I was really kind of curious as to if you're planning in the future to bring that particular element on board, particularly since Healthy Start is actually dealing with the firstborn, the first child, and not getting into some of the other elements that relief nurseries would get into, and that's those where the courts or other people are involved and say that you do need to have an intervention rather than going through the big system, so that you're diverting them then from that system, and you're bringing all of these other resources to bear, hopefully that you can get them treated and reduce those abuse and neglect rates. So is there any plans in Jackson County to move in that direction?
The chair of our early childhood committee is impassioned to eventually get a children's relief program in our county, and there is a group of people that are working hard to try to make sure that happens. They are looking at pulling together at least the beginnings, because it's an expensive project, and they're looking at trying to pull that together. So our early childhood partnership team has that as an exceedingly high priority, particularly because of the child abuse and the neglect issues.
I was just going to say, Senator Winter, in fact, Mary Curtis Gramley would be sitting here today before you, as coming before you with this, but she had a grant that was due to help fund the relief nursery, which she felt was more of a priority.
How much does the community have to raise in order to begin to establish their relief nurseries? For individuals who don't know, the community raises, in this community, for example, we had someone to give us a building that was worth $1 million. The community itself got busy, raised money, and then that money is then leveraged with governmental dollars in order to make this work, but the community has to be very much engaged in order for relief nurseries to work. So have you set a dollar figure on how much you want to raise in order to get going?
I think one of the obstacles for us is that in the immediate future, it does not look like the government dollars, which is really the money that is used to fund the ongoing program, is going to be increasing. So we are looking at what we can reasonably start at this point in time without accessing additional government money. And so that's what the grant is about, is to try to kind of start a baseline program that we can add to as we go along. So I think that their goal at this point was about $100,000 to do a baseline project that would get us started anyway.
Okay. Senator Bates.
First, thanks to all of you for coming up here. Did you leave last night or this morning?
Last night.
I left this morning, so I'm used to it. We do make coffee, so we're all set. So thank you both for coming up here. I know it's a long drive and a hard one. And I just want to ask a couple of simple questions, but I also want to make a statement so you understand where we're coming from here. First, I know the Herculean task you guys are trying to do down in our county, and not only in White City, but in West Medford and other areas mm-hmm. where you're trying to integrate services. And I'll echo what Senator Winters has said, that you are doing a good job as far as integrating the services and doing the best you can with the job you got to do. I am very concerned, though, in our county, and I want to hear what you think of this, that we're losing ground. We're not gaining ground. I think the methamphetamine is getting worse as far as usage is concerned. I think children are higher risk now than they were 5 years ago. Some of that's from lack of funding. And I think some of that, and this is what I want to hear your answer to, is because our basic program, I believe, is going in the wrong direction. Our basic program has been that we put families back together, that we do everything we can to rehabilitate people. And I think we have to look at that policy very carefully. I've watched this now for 30 years as a member of that community, delivering babies and watching families. And while there are certainly families that can be helped and can turn their lives around, there are many families that I've seen three generations now, there's no change. And the way to change that, the only way I've seen that change, is to remove those kids at risk early, get them into the foster system for a very short period, and move them to adoptive parents where they have a stable home. And I firmly believe that's the only way we're going to get handles on this thing. This is something that you people have worked on for years and years and years and years. And when I talk to some of you workers privately, they tell me they wish there were more adoptions, but they can't say it publicly because the public policy is we're not moving in that direction. So I'm asking you this morning if you feel comfortable answering that question. Do you really believe that all the efforts you're making are going to result in 5 or 10 years in turning around our social ills in our county? Or do we need to look very carefully at what we're really doing and make a decision that in some cases we're not going to be able to turn people around, and we need to move towards those children getting out of those dangerous situations and putting the kids first, not the families, but the kids mm-hmm. first, and moving them on?
Maybe I could speak to that because I'm very involved with the Family Drug Court Project and wrote the grant for that. So I've learned a lot in that process because, again, those are that's 50 families a year that are in the child welfare system that come to Family Drug Court as their last chance to be able to continue custody of their children. So this is it for them or they lose custody. And I used to be a child welfare worker a long time ago. What I would have to say is, believe it or not, it's gotten a lot better. The national law, AFSA law, has set timelines that have really driven the process, forced the process to look at the reality in children's lives and to really pay attention to that. I'm not sure we're as far as we need to go with that, particularly when you're dealing with methamphetamine, which is so devastating to families. But I think we're a lot farther than we used to be. And one of the things we see in the Family Drug Court, you would think the outcome, if you're naive, would be the number of children that return home successfully. But in reality, about a fifth of the families in that process decide voluntarily that they are not the place to bring that child up, that they cannot do it fast enough to take care of that child. And we have learned to regard those decisions as success. That for that child at that time, his best success, even his family will agree. And the families come in, they only come to Family Drug Court if they are ready because they want to deal with the problem. Because they have to sign all their rights away. If they don't succeed, they end up going to jail, which they would never in the normal system. So it's, you're not going to get families in there except families that really want to keep their kids. And even a group of those families realize that in the process that they can't do it quick enough for their kids. We have another group of families who, as Sarah mentioned, are able to use the treatment process and turn their lives around and really be a success at it. And so they end up at the other end being good parents in solid recovery with a lot of support that they can really carry on that parenting role. So I think, in answer to your question, that it's actually better now than it was 5 years ago before the federal law, where you would have kids bounce around in foster homes for decades. Not decades, because they wouldn't be kids anymore, but many years. And whether we're at the right place now or we need to continue to shorten that, I don't know.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Hello.
I didn't make myself clear in my question. I realize the process of moving through the system from the beginning to the end as far as adoption has improved. We're at 14 months or so. That's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is, looking at the basic program, do you really think that we're going in the right direction? What I mean by that is, should we be having a hugely large number of kids going into adoption to end the cycle of abuse and neglect? You tell me things are getting better, and yet you know and I know that the risk for children and the amount of neglect and amount of abuse going on is increasing, not decreasing. And methamphetamine use is increasing, not decreasing. So I have a hard time believing things are better, okay? They're only better from the point of view that once we make a decision to move a child through the foster care system into adoption, we're faster now, and that's good. We haven't got the huge roles in foster homes we used to. But I'm asking for something more basic than that. I'm asking to evaluate whether or not we really are making progress on these issues. I sit here after 5 years listening to all the planning, all the meetings, all the communities being drawn together, and I see what are the actual performance measures we're looking at. Are they improving? I don't believe they are. And things that are improving, I'm not sure it's because of what we're doing. Declining teenage pregnancy rates may be more the effect of Planned Parenthood than anything else. Declining rates in high school dropouts may be more the way we're measuring those than the actual declines. There's all kinds of questions out here that are not being answered, really. And you guys are on the front lines. Sarah, you've got a program with 60 people out in White City. And you've got a mentoring program. You've taken a child on to help out. In your heart of hearts, do you really think we're making a difference? Do you think we're really moving in the right direction? Or do we need to step back and say, let's take a look at this and make a decision about what we're really doing with our programs?
I don't have all the answers. What comes to my mind is I think children who really are at risk, if I was one of those kids, I'm going to be torn. One is I have a, in spite of how bad a family can be, kids have tremendous loyalty to their families. And so I think it's worth trying to establish some kind of unity and give some support to that family. I don't think it's doing it for any length of time is really counterproductive. I mean, you've got to look at, number one, the safety of that child and finding good foster homes where they are safe. And then the other thing I have to say is I really strongly believe in prevention. I think that all kids in our culture are at risk in a sense that it doesn't matter how good of a family you come from. You're still going to be exposed to these kinds of alcohol and drugs and methamphetamine. And so I strongly believe in prevention and having the community, not government. I mean, part of the reason that I love this job, and I've been doing it for 10 years now, is there's a chart that the commission had when I first started, and it has this hierarchy. And community is at the bottom. And I thought, aha, that's for me. You know, government from the bottom up, where community is the basis. So, I mean, that drives a lot of my personal commitment to this process. And I give you an example out of inspiring community, and that would be out in the Talent Middle School. The commission wrote a federal grant. It was a conflict resolution program. And I was in charge of that program out there. So for 4 years, I got to know the Talent Middle School kids and the teachers and the bus drivers and the lunchroom monitors and the parents and the administrators. And what we did with this conflict resolution program is teach it to everybody, the parents, the kids. Everybody got invested in this and learned the new language, what it was all about. So now that program ended in year 2000. So what, you say? Well, the conflict resolution program is still going. They got so invested in that they took it on. There is no more federal funding for that. And if you look at, okay, what does that have to do with all of this? Kids who become peer mediators, kids who learn skills on how to deal with this kind of a life that we have in our community, those are the kids that are likely to make better decisions and not get involved. You have to keep the hope. I mean, I can understand how you can get so discouraged. You know, oh my gosh, here comes the grandchild. And it can be discouraging, but don't give up the hope.
I'm not giving up the hope. I'm saying let's step back and take a good look.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to move on. Okay, I also would like to just say, to kind of counterbalance this a little bit, that we have to be careful to assume that the government can just decide when a family is beyond hope. Certainly, that's one of the things that you're confronted with every day, and you're saying that a fifth of the families in the family drug court will decide as part of the discussion that they will give their children up for adoptions, but we're still based on a government that, in theory, has no greater power than the people themselves. And so when a group decide that another group no longer have the right to have their children, that's a pretty hefty responsibility to assume. And for the government just to say, well, we're going to increase the number of adoptions and just take these kids away from you because we think you're doing a lousy job, that is being done, but it's a very weighty decision to be made and certainly can't be made lightly. And I agree that we really have to focus on what can we do to lessen the meth problem and not merely say, well, we're stuck with it and we're just going to pull kids from families. Although I certainly understand Dr. Bates' position, working with families and seeing the problems come back generation after generation, it is not an easy decision. And when families are involved, it's something that has to be taken very carefully, considering all aspects. Because children, generally, we know, would rather come stay with bad parents than go to a good foster home situation if they had their own choice. And so we're making decisions on what we think is best for them. And we need to certainly understand that it has lifelong consequences for the children, regardless of what the decision is made. Senator Winner?
I just need to make one comment. And most everybody on this panel know and that this issue has been one that's been close to me since I was in Children's Services Division back in 1971. Mm-hmm. And always when you talk about prevention, it's a hard one to get your arms around. Mm-hmm. We were talking in 1971 of trying to get then policymakers to recognize early intervention and prevention. And each time it comes when we're in budget crunches, that's the first to go. And each time that's the least that we invest. And so we pay the price whenever we delay. The methamphetamine issue was raised in 99, and it wasn't at the level that it is now of being epidemic. There were those that came to testify then that talked about the rise in abuse and neglect. And I think we neglected our role, quite frankly. And the other piece that I have to put on the record, we talk about generational. Methamphetamine is beyond generational. It is more than talking about one family repeating and repeating. You're having every socioeconomical level in this society that is plagued and are dealing with this issue and abusing their kids. So I don't want anybody out here thinking that it's only those in poverty, because it's not true. And I think you need to get a better understanding of what these counties and what we're dealing with when you talk about 80%. If you go out at OSP and look, is alcohol and drug. Mm-hmm. If you look at the stats on their cases, it's alcohol and drugs. And I just have to put that out there, because too often we put things in nice little boxes that don't fit nice little boxes. And it is at every social economical level in this state. And I submit to you that, the federal government is now becoming involved because it's leaving the West and it's moving east.
You're here.
back to earlier, Karen mentioned that in Jackson County, we have 80%, she said 80% of all the beds in both the jails in Jackson County and in the foster homes are related to meth. That is absolutely a crisis that we find ourselves in, and we have to take action, although I haven't heard a clear consensus on what that action ought to be.
And we don't have the foster homes. I mean, the other piece of it, it's easy. You've got to find people who want to adopt hard to place children. We don't have the number of foster homes in here. So it's not just very simply of saying, hey, we're going to terminate parental rights then.
I wasn't trying to say
that.
Okay, it's not taken out of context.
And what I have learned with the meth is it's so complex. You are never going to talk about a strategy. You have to talk about 100,
multiple strategies.
200 strategies, and some of them need to happen at your level, some of them need to happen at the federal level, and a whole lot of them need to happen at the community level. And there is no silver bullet. What?
This is not something that's going to get solved outside of homes. You look at families, and you have a good indicator, and that's not perfect, of course. But I think we would all agree that strong families have less of that problem than dysfunctional, whatever that is defined as, families. And so we need to be working on it from the family level on up. And it's you're right, though. It's a multi-tiered, complex issue. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you guys for coming up last night. I know Dr. Bates thinks it's a long, hard journey up here. I mean, he doesn't understand what it's like to go over the San Diego Pass on a snowy night. I mean, it's freezing. But I think where he's going with that line of questioning is not so much in questioning the value of the commission. Certainly, I know he values that a great deal, but it's, you know, what are the numbers? What is the evidence, and what is the evidence-based practices? I mean, you say one-fifth of the families, you know, give up the rights to their children. What happens to the other 80%? This is probably more a question for Mickey, and I see she's writing it down. You know, what are we doing that is documentably impacting the lives of these children? I mean, quite frankly, I understand the concerns of the chair when he's saying, you know, this is a very large decision, you know, termination of parental rights. I can't imagine, you know, the difficulty, the anguish of those individuals engaged in making that decision. It's just got to be beyond tough. But at the end of the day, there does come a point when the parents have abrogated their responsibilities and therefore their rights to taking care of those children otherwise, from only a cost standpoint to the state, not to mention all of the other emotional, you know, aspects, quality of life, only a cost aspect to the state, we're going to be paying for the rest of that child's life.
You're right.
So at some point in time, I mean, what, again, I ramble, but what are the evidence-based practices? What are we truly doing that truly works? I mean, drug and family courts, I love them. I wish we had them in Deschutes County. You guys are lucky. But I think that's the basis of Dr. Bates' question is, you know, anecdotal stories are great, but what happens to the other 80%? And, again, that's more a question for Mickey than for you guys. Thank you for being here.
Well, and I would just say kind of in response to that, that I think it was Senator Winters that mentioned that we're all a little bit late in dealing with the true crisis of meth, because one of the realities is we haven't done a very good job on tracking what we've done with meth and how it's worked. Nobody has had that charge. So we are really starting kind of at baseline about what are the best practices specific to meth, because it is such a devastating, you know, it's a very different drug. It has different kind of impact on people. It affects your brain. It's long-term. So, you know, what works with that and what works with the families that are involved with it? And so we really need to step up our response to this, because we don't have enough of the information. And Senator Winters is right. The federal government really ignored the whole methamphetamine epidemic because it was West Coast and not so much East Coast. And I also wanted to just mention for Senator Winters that one of the most interesting things is we started doing meth work. We started going around to the Rotary Clubs with all the middle class and upper middle class people that belong to them and talking about methamphetamine. The two times that I went to personally to speak to those groups, two or three members came up to me afterwards and said, you know, my sister, this has been a problem with my sister, this has been a problem with my nephew, and so it is cross economic groups.
Okay, you know, I'm letting this go on because this is really important. I mean, this is not like, well, we're covering business here today so we can get out of this committee meeting. We're talking about an issue that is pandemic, and certainly epidemic in our own communities, and maybe from this we will go to our other committees and try and be more involved in making this a key issue of this legislative session. One final comment or question,
yeah,
by Senator Sampson.
I wanted to go back to your original question, Representative. You had said that this is a voluntary program, so you're worried about the numbers. Because what about, since it's a voluntary program, the hardcore drug dealers aren't going to be in the program. You're absolutely right. But of those people that are in the program, having worked with at least the Healthy Start, those are at-risk families who actually volunteer to be in it. So there are families that we are working with that it
our involvement in their lives makes a difference. Mm-hmm. But the problem is so huge that there's so many that we're missing. And we don't have the staff, we don't have the money, the resources to provide the services. But I just wanted to know there are families that we are reaching and saving, so to speak.
Just a quick comment on that.
Quick comment.
The self-selection that goes on in the Early Start programs really may be of value because of this. I hate to categorize people, mm-hmm. but in very simple terms, you have a group of people who you're not going to make an impact, mm-hmm. and they don't want you there. Mm-hmm. And you have a large group of people who recognize they've got a problem and don't know how to deal mm-hmm. with it, but they want help. And they're selecting you out. And those are the ones you probably are having a positive impact with, and that's the real value of your program. Your problem is you've got a large number of people and not enough resources to deal with that. But you've got people yeah. saying to you, we want the help, and we'll respond to the help, but you can't get it all to them. And yeah. I appreciate that. Okay.
That's exactly right. I used to be a probation counselor, adult misdemeanors, and I found out there was that middle, the ones that really aren't ready for help will suck you dry. And you're better off to just let them go their way and focus on that middle one where they want the help, and they, just a helping hand can make a huge difference. But the one thing before I turn it over to CA that I would just like to say is I think you can get so caught up in those families that are so at risk, you can forget about prevention. And to get those kids before, you've got to get the information to them. They have got to know just how dangerous it is and what can happen. Because they may have one try and that's it. Okay. So prevention is really, really important.
And certainly the idea that they would be willing means that they're open. And there's an old saying, a man convinced against his will via the same opinion still. And if we had mm-hmm. mandatory training for families, those that would not have allowed you to come in on their own are not likely to accept mm-hmm. what's said anyway. So that's a certain factor as well. Could we move on to Lane County?
Yes, thank you. Committee members, Chair Richardson, it's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to be in the company of Jackson County. It's impressive to hear everything that you're doing. Before I get to my testimony, I do want to respond to some of the questions. I was sitting on my hands and biting my tongue because I wanted to respond. Just to let you know, my name is Cindy Ann Baskerville. I also go by C.A. Baskerville.
So we even have an acronym.
I know, an acronym for the name. I know. How about that? In terms of all the questions around prevention and what works and what's most important, what I would like to offer is a reminder that substance abuse prevention has had the benefit of excellent science and research for well over 15, 20 years. And indeed, in Oregon, for at least 15 years, we've embraced science. We've been operating at the community level, at the county level, with implementation using science. And the gift of Senate Bill 267 that you all passed last legislative session, I think, added additional emphasis to all the partners that are represented not only in the comprehensive planning that we're talking about today, but all of the other partners that we work with at the local level. And the science of prevention tells us that it's not a five-year program. It's not a one program fits all. Rather, it's a comprehensive, multi-tiered approach for all different kinds of people, for every person, dare I say, and it requires a commitment. We like to talk about the 100-year plan, not the 5-year plan, not the 2-year plan, not the 10-year grant or whatever, but it's really looking at our community in 100 years. What do we need to do? Substance abuse needs to move away from looking at individuals who may abuse and may unfortunately become addicted, moving away from the stigma of having done something wrong to looking at it as a public health issue. And that's, I think, part of what our community education needs to focus on. I offer that not only as a certified prevention specialist, but as a former certified alcohol and drug counselor and a qualified mental health specialist. I offer that to you as years of experience working not only in the mental health, but also the substance abuse field, both in treatment and for the last 12 years in prevention. Now let me get to my testimony about this. I'm Lane County Prevention Coordinator. I do not work for our local Commission on Children and Families. I work for the Department of Health and Human Services. I'm here today to give you a few minutes of testimony about the efficiencies and effectiveness of our county's cross-systems work and our investment for the long term. As you may know, Lane County has a strong reputation for collaboration. Indeed, some refer to us as the process capital of Oregon. And we've seen the power of working together. We reduce access barriers. We improve outcomes for families and children. We decrease service costs. We bring new revenue to our county and Oregon as a whole. We save the taxpayer dollars as well as improve the quality of life for our citizens. Although we've been referred to as the process capital of Oregon, we still need some help in being more effective. A key tool which helped and one we now use in our collaborative work is the Lane County's Comprehensive Community Plan for Services to Children and Families, also known as Senate Bill 555. The creation of this document and its subsequent update has resulted in improved networking, greater understanding across programs, and a realization that our system of services for children, youth, and families could benefit from much closer collaboration and coordination between local partners, providers, funders, policymakers, businesses, and consumers. This document sets the county's priorities and drives much of our local collaborative thinking and action. The following are a few examples of some specific efforts that find their roots in our local plan and have grown and flourished as a result. The first example I want to offer you is throughout Lane County, we have an innovative network of school-based family resource centers, FRCs. They help nurture and create caring school climates where children, youth, and caregivers are all valued partners with school staff in every child's success and well-being. FRCs represent a partnership between families, schools, community organizations, and businesses offering resources that help children and families to be safe, successful, and healthy in learning at home and in the relationship to the communities in which they live. Between July 1, 2003 and June 30, 2004, family resource centers in Lane County touched the lives of 4,702 children, youth, and parents or caregivers at an average cost of $43 a person. Qualitatively, FRCs are measuring and reporting great successes in the following outcomes for youth and families: effectiveness in social support groups, improvements in the quality of parent-child interactions, positive attitudes scored towards school, improved community-based supports, and accountability. Also during that fiscal year, our community made the decision to direct some of our county's alcohol and drug prevention dollars to the family resource centers as a perfect touch point to reach both youth and families with targeted support and prevention services. To date, this effort has resulted in a total of 585 parents and 1,818 youth, for a total of 2,403 reserving targeted, evidence-based prevention practices. In addition to the direct support given to children and families, there are other ongoing benefits to the schools. FRC and other school personnel have received training and a better understanding of the impacts of alcohol and other drug abuse or addiction and the resources available to help. FRCs are not funded by any one agency, school, or funding stream. In fact, they would not exist without the powerful collaborative support of all the partners involved: schools, social service agencies and funders, businesses, and community members. A little divergent here, Senator, one of the questions that you had that relates to this is we allocated some of our 2003-2005 prevention, alcohol and drug prevention services to support these services in our family resource centers. That funding in our county was cut by over $200,000, and indeed the shift in funding requirements has now prevented us from continuing that allocation, which has us greatly concerned. But again, in partnership with our with those partners that I mentioned, we're trying to find other funds to continue those services.
When you say shift in funding requirements, you're saying strings attached have decreased your ability to be flexible?
A shift, and certainly I know my partners in Jackson County can speak to this as well. We previously received alcohol and drug prevention services with the guidelines to allocate funds on the continuum of need, all the way from universal to targeted prevention. Over the last 4 years, it's gotten away from universal prevention to more targeted. And indeed, the 2003-05 biennium, we were asked to use, I can't remember the exact percentages, but a good portion of the percentages to only targeted services. And that's the funding that we allocated here. In the next biennium, 05-07, our funds were cut $200,000, and we were required to there are certain requirements you have to fund, and after those things are funded, including a prevention coordinator and support to community coalitions, we had no money left.
Okay, and those requirements were
there are the guidelines from the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services, and those are funneled through from federal requirements. So, again, when we talk about the effectiveness of prevention, I think it's important to consider the commitment and the continued funding streams that allow us to continue these effective programs. It's very difficult to measure effectiveness when we have a two-year funding stream and then suddenly the funding is cut and we're asked to still measure the same high-level outcomes. It's very unfair, I believe, at the local level. A second example I'd like to share is that of a recent 27-month grant Lane County received. Lane County was selected as one of four pilot sites across the state to implement an evidence-based prevention strategies through the Early Childhood State Incentive Grant. As the local mental health and alcohol and drug systems coordinator, my Department of Health and Human Services was the required applicant. However, our local Commission on Children and Families has a much stronger tie with the early childhood system. Indeed, the Lane County Department of Children and Families has taken the lead in facilitating and convening our local early childhood care providers to provide ongoing network and collaboration. Our collaboration and planning provided the tools and information necessary to determine the needs of the targeted population identified in the grant application. We will focus our efforts in South Lane County and will target families with children ages 0 to 6 who are at risk of behavioral health disorders. This project brings together mental health specialists, substance abuse specialists, treatment and prevention experts, early childhood experts, and in-home care providers for the first time. This $312,500 grant provided us with an opportunity to leverage an additional $270,000 of in-kind funding from Behavioral Health and Family Advocacy Services, making the total for this pilot project $600,000. Without question, the collaboration of the local early childhood plan were essential in preparing Lane County to implement these effective and essential services. I hope the two examples that I provided demonstrate the extent to which Lane County utilizes the comprehensive plan. It's not a document that sits on the shelf in our county. The process involved and all the challenges of weaving different systems from juvenile crime prevention, alcohol and drug services, early childhood, were difficult indeed, but they were important and together helped us craft one comprehensive plan that helped crystallize the vision for our county. Thank you very much for asking me to be here.
Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one thing that I heard, and I certainly hope this committee will take it very seriously, is the talk of long-term, be it whether that's a 100-year plan or
right.
or what. One of the things is, as we address the meth epidemic that's tearing our state apart, it's deja vu all over again. My community was ripped apart by a crack cocaine epidemic in the late 80s. What we have to be aware of is, you know, by after the wave of meth passes, there will be a different drug. There will be a new drug, a designer drug. We have to deal with the problems of addiction, and we have to do it in a way that that as these new challenges come along, we can respond to them very, very quickly, and that's the one
huge failure that I've seen us as a society make, whether it's going back to the heroin epidemic in the 30s and early 40s to crack cocaine or meth now. We've got to learn to how to respond to these quicker or examine the whole causes of addiction, again, as a public health issue.
Yeah,
and
sure.
these epidemics follow a very, very predictable pattern.
This is not a time for hand-wringing. In the early previous century, cocaine, as we know, you know, those especially are into history, you know, it was legal and was thought medicinal at first. I mean, Coca-Cola took advantage of this in early years of its beverages. And it turned into a huge problem in the 20s and early 30s. But they dealt with it, and it decreased, and society went on. And so we need to learn from history and not wait until things become such a crisis before we react. And I certainly agree that this is an ongoing thing, an ongoing process of helping individuals and families make proper decisions, because it's not like things just go along and then all of a sudden they take a turn. Usually there's circumstances that lead to it, and so we can learn a lot from the past and hopefully set up a process which will help the future not keep having history repeat itself with different kinds of drugs. Other thoughts, comments, questions? Senator.
Question for our friends from Jackson County, and I apologize, I might have been out of the room. You indicated at the bottom of your info sheet here that you just the efforts bringing everyone together help leverage about an additional $1,015,000 of state, federal, and grant funds, foundation funds. How do those break down, round numbers? I mean, about how much state funds, how much Fed, and how much foundation? Maybe
ballpark.
You don't know, but yeah, real ballpark.
Okay. Probably $600,000 is federal fund, $300,000 are state fund, or channel through state, and then the remaining would be foundation or grant funding. Yeah, and that's really rough.
Okay. Understand.
All right, Senator Bates.
One last comment. I want to thank you all for coming again. I know it's a long trip, but I know the work you do down there is extremely important. And one of the things I keep in my mind is, as much as we have concerns about our county now, where would we be without your work? I think the situation would be really devastating. So we do appreciate what you're doing, especially with a time when we've had unemployment, which always gives us more difficulty in our county, as does every county. At the same time, we've been cutting your budgets when you need them increased the most. We've been cutting them, so we have no choice. So we appreciate the work we do. I know you're working hard down there. We'll continue to work with you and give you all the support we can.
Mr. Chair, can I ask for a request? Because Senator Bates just brought up a very interesting piece, and I know when I used to be with the agency that we always knew that when the unemployment rate was up, that the demand for services went up. So it may be helpful if you have some kind of statistical data that you could track. From when we started going into our downward spiral in the economy, and that are the caseload drivers that went up, because that would have a dramatic effect on actually your performance measures and those outcomes, because you're having a greater population than you probably would have had. So it would be helpful if by county that the commission can bring those statistics in and what changes have occurred.
Okay, thank you. Senator West?
Yeah, I think Senator Winters raises a really good point. And Cindy, you used the word unfair. It's unfair of you to expect us to continue these performance evaluation standards. I think that's what it was in reference to. But, unfair is kind of a judgmental, pejorative word. I take some umbrage at that, because many of us at this dais walked over hot coals to help prevent, that unfairness, or whatever word you want to choose. I mean, it's just kind of the way it is, and we recognize that. And I think Senator Winter's point is well taken. I mean, there's some of the evidence-based stuff. I mean, what happens when you had to curtail services, prevention, drug court or otherwise? What caseload spiked? What crime rates went up? What domestic violence increased? I think that's a more productive, you know, approach. And I see Mickey taking lots of notes back there, and that's a good thing. So that, I think Senator Winters raises, you know, an excellent line of approach to this thing. So,
Senator, I certainly didn't mean to personalize the unfair comment. It was more of a general comment that I absolutely support 100% outcomes. I absolutely support 100% the need to implement evidence-based practices, prevention through incarceration, for that matter. My unfair comment was more about it's unfair to the community. It's unfair, and maybe that's the inappropriate word. It feels unfair to ask for the same level of outcomes, a reduction in certain things, if indeed the support, the resource support, is not consistent. Because science, when we use science, and that's what we're asked to do, indeed requires us to have constant resources. That's part of the science, is that constant commitment to look at the broad spectrum of needs. And when we're trying to do that, communities across the country are trying to do that, and I think it's unrealistic. Maybe that's a better word. Unrealistic, how's that? Yeah. I certainly didn't mean it personal at all.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to just mention one thing as to kind of wrap up some of the conversation that we've had on meth and so forth, and that is that very rarely will, in an organization, whether it's a large corporation or government, will those at the top come up with a brilliant idea that they can then just send down to all the local level, saying, go ahead and implement this. What normally happens is the best ideas are kind of formed in the foundry of local day-to-day living, and the communities will come up with solutions. And then if that information gets up to us and we see something that's really working well in Lane County and in Benton County and in Jackson County, and there's some similarity, then we can focus on that and say, you know what, this is good. The people that are in the trenches that are doing this are having some success with this approach that then will give guidance to policymakers to provide that information and training to all the counties. And so it is not likely that you'll have great results if you merely would wait and for us to do something that's just going to be wonderful. In other words, let us know what works. Let us know from your experience what really makes a difference, because it's the problems get best solved closest to the people. And then if we can help financially or from information and training to implement widespread those solutions that are working. Now, every problem that we're confronted with is being successfully solved somewhere. And so it's about getting that information, learning from other people's experience, and then implementing widespread that will help make the difference. Thank you so much. We have a comment from
us. Quick comment on outcomes. Outcomes are a measurement yardstick. There's no question that we have to take a second level and understand what the comparisons of those measurements are, what's fair to compare them with. For example, if using a stock market analysis, if you're judging how a mutual fund performs, you better look and see how the whole general market has been doing. And if the market goes in the tank, then a modest gain, a very modest gain by a fund, might be absolutely outstanding. Right. If the market has went way over, a modest gain might not be much of a result. And so we've got to put all of our outcomes, which are as good a measurements as we have, we have to put them in the context of what else is happening. Mm-hmm. And that's sometimes a little more difficult, but I think that's where the fairness comes in. Yeah, you got a different outcome if your outcomes, performances have dropped, but in light of a dramatic decrease in funding,
or in light of some an economy sagging or whatever, we have to be in a position to be able to understand that and use some common sense in how we're using those measurements.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hanum.
Well, Mr. Chairman, because we're here to supposedly promote good information, I thought I'd let you know that though Dr. Pemberton in his early elixirs may have had cocaine in formulas, those formulas of Coca-Cola that have ever been sold through fountain or bottle and can did never contain cocaine.
Damn! So the new Coke was not the new Coke.
Just got to set the record straight there.
for those of you, we should tell the audience. For those
who different history books.
Yes. Representative Hanna is a Coca-Cola distributor and.
Mr. Chair, another piece of information that you may want to add to that, and I think sometimes we forget it on this side of the aisle, and that's those legislative directions that would have changed your performance outcomes.
Okay. Thank you.
More interested in the Coke deal now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes,
that's pretty good.
I know you guys thought you were going to get to leave, but...
No, we're anxious to hear from you.
Thank you.
As our final speaker.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Becky Eklund. I'm the Juvenile Crime Prevention Coordinator with the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission. I think I might have to question our planning process that they made me come after the county people. They were so great. Really good to hear from them.
Actually, you were scheduled earlier, but
I know.
We had
somebody changed the plan to meet current needs.
It's all right.
Senate Bill 555, passed in 1999, really was a shift in philosophy, in that it shifted the role of the state government away from direct funding of services to a more community-based emphasis on prevention that research shows us is more effective and less expensive than intensive residential services. It moved toward broad-based citizen involvement in identifying priorities in communities and knowing that the state may not have all the answers to all the issues at the community level, and that there is no single answer or program to address the needs in 36 counties across the state of Oregon. So a real philosophical shift on to collaboration, coordination, bringing dwindling funding sources together to address the underlying issues that cause or lead to the sort of problems we're talking about, drug and alcohol abuse, school dropout, juvenile crime, and so forth. I think you just received a handout. One of them is a general overview of Partners for Children and Families that you've been hearing about. It talks about some of the accomplishments over the last few years. It talks about who the partners are involved in the steering committee, some information about the different phases of the planning process that the counties have been going through, and then some direction about where we're headed and moving ahead. The other sheet you have is a graph of outcomes, and we selected just a handful of outcomes that local commissions and their partners are working to address. These are here not for comparison purposes between the particular outcomes, but to give you a sense of the trends that we're seeing in Ready to Learn, which is the early childhood benchmark, juvenile recidivism rate, the use of alcohol and drugs, and that was measured through a survey of 8th grade students across the state, school dropouts, and then referrals to county juvenile departments. Now, I think given these particular issues, these outcomes look pretty good, particularly when you consider
the significant loss of prevention funding over the last few years, and I think particularly in 2003 when a lot of cuts to prevention occurred. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the following years to see if there's going to be a correlation in these outcomes along with those drops in funding.
Can I interrupt just for a moment? I may not be reading this correctly. You said it looks pretty good. If there is a 4% plus or minus margin of error, it looks like it's pretty flat in almost all areas except for Ready to Learn. Am I not reading this correctly?
Well, I think there's what's flat are the alcohol and drug issues. I think you see juvenile recidivism is dropping a bit. The school dropout rate has come down over the last few years, and the juvenile crime rate has come down as well.
Okay.
You know, not like this.
If you have 4% margin of error in any kind of statistical mm-hmm. thing, then I'm only seeing a 4% or better change from 98 to 2003 in recidivism and Ready to Learn. But I'm just always focusing on outcomes. If we're maybe it would have been much worse. You know, I don't know. I'm just trying to get a sense of how things are going.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Bates.
I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, but I don't want answers right now. Just give them to me later.
Okay.
I don't think you can give them to me. First, the chair's comment that we don't know where we'd be without you is absolutely true. This is right through the middle of one of the worst recessions we've seen in the state, and maybe keeping flat in that time is a pretty good achievement for all
mm-hmm.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to know, on your Ready to Learn program, what your measures were to determine if a child's ready to learn. It was subjective or objective, and I'm not sure how you measure something like that. But give us an idea of where you got your data and what it really meant. On the alcohol and drug use, was it self-reporting, or did you have some other method of gathering information on it? Again, self-reporting can be pretty important sometimes for this age group if you can get them in the right setting to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be difficult to determine exactly what's going on. I'd like to get a feel for how you got that information. Dropout rate, is that, I assume that's for high school?
High school dropout rate, correct.
The number I'd like of the dropout rate is the number of children leaving the eighth grade in comparison to the number of children or young people graduating 12th grade, not counting GED. What most school districts will tell you is they can't track that number because children are moving around in the state or leaving the state or coming in or going out. I think on a state level, we should be able to track that. On an overall level, I'd like to see what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen numbers of 4 or 5%, and I happen to know that's not the right number for that number. But I don't know what the number really is, and so I'd like to see that too. Okay, and I don't want those answers now. I know you can't do it. If you can get them back to us later, I sure appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Okay, please. Oh, excuse me.
And for me, if you would add just the dollar numbers in those years to that, because that then gives us, say, a complete picture.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Excellent. As we've cut your funding and expected you to do more, let me know what's happened. Okay. I know it hasn't been this way.
You know, particularly when I use it, you know, if I look at 2000 on the eighth grader in the use of drugs in the last 30 days, you know, we had a drop, and then in 01 it went back up, and so it just helps if we know and track those with funding.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, if I could just clarify, in terms of the dollar information you want, I would guess that there would have to be some slicing and dicing of the numbers done. I mean, because you're looking at the whole education budget, and do you look at the whole education budget relative to dropouts? Do you look at special programs that are geared to dropouts, Ready to Learn? You know, how many of the programs operative locally are Ready to Learn versus something else? So I guess I would ask that you acknowledge that presenters have some flexibility in how they prepare those dollar numbers.
Yes, but it would be nice if they would reference, you know, ask where those, what that relates to. You know, one of the difficulties that you have, in doing budget is that there's so many sources and so many people that are involved and so many agencies that are involved and so many streams that are going in so many different directions. So it would be kind of nice when you're tracking to be able to say, well, you know, we've had X amount of dollars that we devoted to Ready to Learn.
It's going to be a definitional challenge to come up with that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So the work of Partners for Children and Families is about maximizing government resources through its emphasis on collaboration and best practices, streamlining our systems, and improving community connections to provide services for children and families. So our work ahead of us is great. You've heard a lot from other people about the good work that's been done so far. We have many things that we want to continue to work on. Several of them Mickey Lansing referenced in her comments about the work that's going on now that we'll need to continue over the next couple of years. One is around Senate Bill 267 that several people referenced. That's the legislation passed last session requiring several agencies to use funds for evidence-based and cost-effective services and programs at the local level. That is a very challenging task. And I say that more around the process because we know that communities are making good decisions about how those funds are being spent at the local level, and they are being spent for services that are effective. There's been enough research now over the last few years to tell us what's effective in addressing juvenile crime prevention, evidence-based practices to help keep kids in school, evidence-based practices around early childhood programs. Many times those are very expensive programs and services, and so we're balancing how do we meet the direction provided to us in that legislation, how do we finance that at the local level, and still provide services to as many people. I mean, I know there'll never be enough money to provide services to all the people who need them, but that's going to be a struggle. In addition, the struggle with that is around five different agencies, some with very different direction, providing very different services. So we have the Department of Corrections to the Commission on Children and Families. So you've got services from early childhood through adult inmates, and wanting to be consistent in how we implement that at the local level so that service providers don't end up being assessed or get different answers on whether their services are evidence-based or not. So, a challenge, but we are working together. We have an interagency steering committee that includes local partners so that we can work to implement that in a reasonable way, yet still with the direction provided in legislation. We want to continue to identify and eliminate constraints in our processes to support counties. We've consolidated planning, as you've heard earlier, eliminating 3 and 4 planning processes into one that included juvenile crime prevention planning for the Oregon Youth Authority diversion program, planning for alcohol and drug prevention, planning for the Commission on Children and Families. We brought those together into one process for counties. One of the challenges with that is, as we do that, and it makes a lot of sense to do that, so you're really looking at a continuum of services, a continuum of age, and coordinating the funding and the services that go to the local level. The work becomes very complex to bring all of those processes together and the range of services, and I have to compliment our county-level partners in doing that work with that very complex process. We still continue to have laws, direction, rules in our agencies that are different from the other agencies involved in this work, so we're working to identify where those differences are that are creating barriers for communities so that we can
continue to try and simplify that process. So over the next 2 years, we want to continue to align our resources. You heard some of that, the Commission on Children and Families resources with juvenile crime prevention. All of our agencies are connected in some of the services we provide and some of the populations that receive services from those funds from those different agencies. You heard a little bit about, from Mickey Lansing, about a coordinated database. Right now, counties have separate reporting processes for alcohol and drug prevention, for the Commission on Children and Families, for Juvenile Crime Prevention Service. Our hope through that coordinated database is that we can eliminate duplicate reporting, because in some of those cases, counties are reporting on the same people to our different state agencies. So our hope is that with this coordinated database, building on the house that Mickey Lansing talked about in the Commission on Children and Families, that juvenile crime prevention information and alcohol and drug can come together into one system, and that we can eliminate some of the current reporting processes so that counties are reporting once on the same children and families. And then we'll have even more comprehensive data to measure not only activities, but the outcomes.
Mr. Chair?
Uh-oh.
Senator Wilson.
Do you need any enabling language, statutory enabling language, to help you achieve that goal? Or do you already have all the tools you need to compilate the database?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westland.
Yeah, just go like this or go like that.
I think that we can do that without
okay.
enabling legislation.
I have a question. Do you think that once you have this in place and this data, that it will reveal or kind of show that there could be consolidations that would utilize, that would save resources and utilize resources in a way that would make more money available to accomplish the goals instead of accomplishing the structure to work on the goals?
Mr. Chair, I'm hesitant to answer that question.
I'd be happy to meet you privately.
There is never going to be enough money for the services that are out there. I think we're beginning to consolidate services and funds to try and maximize that flexibility at the local level. I don't know if it's going to, you know, free up money to do other things. I think we'll have to take a look at the outcomes and the activities that are going on.
From what we've been hearing today, it appears that this may already be happening just because of the partnering and the discussions, that it starts to show up, that if there's a duplication of services, then, and if you're working in committees, that there can be self-decisions, you know, in committees and in groups to say, okay, why don't you focus on this and we'll focus on this, instead of both trying to deal with the same populations on the same issues. So maybe it'll just evolve and may be evolving right now. Anyway, just a thought.
Thank you. One of the issues that came up from the communities, one of the top issues, is around children's mental health. We do not have a benchmark to measure what's happening with children's mental health. And so we've got a cross-agency group taking a look at that, working closely with the Oregon Progress Board to see if there's a way that so that we can measure, we can tell where we are with that particular issue.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bates.
Thank you for that honesty. That's hard to say in public. Appreciate it. That's a hard thing to measure, number one, especially in a group. But thank you for making an effort.
Thank you, Senator. You also heard earlier we're working across agencies to help the development of community schools across the state. Some of you know about Sun Schools in Portland. It's been a terrific model. They're so that within existing resources, our group hopes to provide information at the local level. If communities decide they want to develop community schools that would combine schools, and where the school could also serve as a family resource center,
to help the involvement of parents in school. Research tells us family and parent involvement with students in school is one of the things you need in order for those youth to be successful in school. So our hope is that community schools, the development, can help create that. We would use blended funding. We have some funding streams that could be redirected at the community level to help support those. So that'll be something we're working on over the next couple of years. We talked about Senate Bill 267. We asked counties to identify barriers they have, barriers to meeting their outcomes that maybe that the state agencies can address. They had a lot of suggestions for us. They identified barriers at the state level, either between our agencies or through administrative rules or statutes, that our agencies are going to work together on to address over the next couple of years. For example, excuse me, several counties referenced increased requirements to fund...
We're about out of time. Can we wrap this up?
Sorry, please. Evidence-based programs. They want us to clarify state requirements. They want us to help them look at the issue of the lack of bilingual and bicultural participation in their processes at the local level. So I'll stop here. Questions?
Thank you very much. Are there questions that are pressing for the
Mr. Chair, we haven't got time for questions right now, but she was getting to the point where we might actually be able to give them some help. We're talking about potential for neighboring legislation that might make their jobs easier and more efficient. And we need to hear that some other time, possibly. But we don't
you wouldn't mind
it or give it to us.
If you could present that for us in writing, I would like very much to have it and have us go over that.
Mr.
It's
Chair.
Just that we ran out of time today.
Be happy to do that, Senator.
Thank you very much. Okay, without further comment, this committee is adjourned. Thank you.